geographer. So she went to UCSB and she got a master's degree there, and she's been working on her doctoral dissertation under the direction of Keith Clark. She's also a student in the IGERT at UCSB, Interactive Digital Business. So she's had, I think, a very fun time today talking to people who are in the ecosystem informatics IGERT and comparing notes there. And Julie's visit is actually being sponsored by our ecosystem informatics IGERT. So many thanks to Julia Jones and Kathy Hoffman and others for hosting there. Julie is an outstanding student. You're going to see that in her presentation. She is working under the funding of the IGERT there at UCSB, but she also has an NSF graduate fellowship. So that's a very prestigious award. And I'm very proud of her because I'm a UCSB graduate, so I love to see outstanding UCSB students, especially here at OSU. So it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Julie Dillman. Thank you.
Thanks, Dawn. And thanks, all of you, for coming. Weather and having you here. It's really a pleasure to meet a lot of you and talk about what you're doing up here. And I am on the more of the cognitive behavioral geography side of things, and my dissertation research actually is on how people acquire spatial information from small digital maps. So a little bit of a departure from what I'm talking about today, but this is great because I get the chance to talk about this research that I don't get to talk about very often to groups. So thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to talk today about digitalization of news stories, and this is something that I worked on, or am working on, with a collaborator in statistics, Alex Villacorta, just finished his PhD and is going to be a postdoc. But before I start with this, I do want to give you a little taste of what our IGERT is doing. The IGERT I'm involved in is an interactive digital multimedia, and I just thought I'd spend a couple minutes, you know, highlighting the kind of projects that we do in our IGERT. So there's 11 different departments involved. And it's really an interesting mix. We have electrical and computer engineering, media arts and technology, so we have engineers and artists, geographers, psychologists, statisticians, student education, and film studies. And so really the idea is to bring together all of these different disciplines that come from very different perspectives and traditions, and you know work together on projects that we in no way could do simply in our own departments. So we have 30 students that have been through the program. I think there's about 18. Currently active, currently funded, 20 faculty, and we've gotten to the point of having three large collaborative projects. So over the years, it has evolved from just a lot of small projects to fewer but larger, more complex. The fourth year of our IGERT. So the three projects, just to kind of give you a taste, and you can go to the website if you want more information or talk to me later. Spheres of Influence, the project that I'm actually going to come to at the end of my talk because the research I'll talk about today kind of feeds into this project. But this is an interactive installation that's in our library, UCSB. And the idea is that it's geospatial and news data integration and visualization. So that's using camera tracking to track the user and monitor their interaction. And so it pulls on Google News and visualizes that in various ways that is controlled by the user. So I'll talk about that more at the end of the talk. Then Out of the Ether is a project with media arts and technology, computer engineering, and music. And the idea here is that a performer, such as a flutist, if they're working with an accompaniment that's not live, traditionally if it's recorded, they're constrained to the pace of that accompaniment. And that's a problem if you're, you know, if you want to have expression in your performance. So what this does is it uses audio, video, and electric field sensors to monitor the performer, and then when the performer gives the cue in a way that they would naturally would, such as making eye contact with another performer in a live situation, they can use those same gestures to actually cue a computer that's going to provide the accompaniment. So this is really, you know, kind of something you wouldn't really think of or expect to see, but these kinds of projects are what we're doing. And then finally, Minotaur, and you might recognize Kurt Goldsberry, who came last week. He and I worked on this project in terms of looking at the map and what kind of map scales are going to be appropriate for small devices that you're using to view maps when you're outside. But this, the idea behind this is that it's a tour guide that takes Wikipedia content about where you are and where your location is and gives you a narrative that links those two geographical locations. So you know, we're working with the film studies who's bringing a narrative theory to this. So rather than a short tour guide that just gives you, you know, various facts, a collection of facts about a place, this actually gives you a story. do in this part. And so today I'll start off with the questions that really drove this research, and then kind of give you the big picture of what I'm talking about, and then give you specifics about our approach. And we did a couple of different things. And then finally I'll wrap up by explaining how this ties into this group of influence project and how it's been inspired other work. Alright, so the main questions here are, how is news reported around the country? And, you know, questions of access to information, communication channels, and, you know, we all know that news is reported differently because we have different public decisions. Editors, journalists, you know, different media outlets all are going to be making these decisions about what news to provide. And so, I mean, it's a huge question. But some sub-questions are, you know, is there a pattern to this? Are there patterns spatially, semantically? And can semantic meaning, or like the topic of the story, the news story, and geography be related? And can we do that through visualization? So, and then another sub-question that Alex is interested in is, does news spread like a disease? And can it be modeled as such? And it's an interesting question. You know, we both thought it was kind of cool, you know, talking about spread of information, spread of disease. But what's interesting is that some people in our audience that we, you know, would present this to would be a little bit squeamish about linking news and information to disease and infection and those kinds of terms. So that was an interesting so if you're interested in the disease part, I'm not going to go into that much today, but I can hook you up with Alex because that was part of his dissertation. So the big picture here, three spaces of news events, and you know, this kind of applies to any news event, but for this research, we're focusing on news spaces, and that's only because there are archives available of newspaper articles, whereas like internet-based news, it's harder to get a handle on who's reading it, and there aren't really, you know, nice comprehensive archives that go back in time. So three spaces, so geographic space, and that includes where an event happens, where it's recorded, you know, where the newspaper is published, all those kinds of questions. Temporal has a lot of facets too, everything from when the event happened, if it was a sequence of events, how long the event lasted, and then how long the reporting lasted. So also with temporal, you can have events that happen that spin off consequences. So maybe, you know, the stories in the newspaper aren't talking about the events themselves anymore, but consequences of the event or other issues that have been raised. And then semantic refers to the meaning of the story. And I say news story to kind of refer to, you know, the whole thing about this event that happens, whereas article refers to a specific newspaper article. And I might say story when I mean article, but you kind of get a picture. So story is just sort of a larger body of, you know, something that's happening in the world. And so for geovisualization for this project, we're really focusing on using it for data exploration, so making sense of a large database of news articles, and looking for patterns in the reporting of the news. And then also for presentation to a broader audience. And what we were going for here, and I'll show you some of our visualizations, is, you know, making it enough of a presentation where the user can come to this for the first time and start to make sense of it, but not just have it totally non-interactive, where you can't explore the data yourself. So we really want to make it so the user could explore the data, ask questions, and, you know, use this visualization with the animation to get to answer the questions. So in a nutshell, it's a spatial, temporal, and semantic analysis of these stories. And you might have seen some news visualizations on the web, things like that, and so some past work has been done, but typically these all capture one or two of the elements, the spatial, semantic, or the temporal, but not all three. So you have Buzz Tracker, which takes Google News and for the day, and then maps it based on what place locations are named in the article. So you just kind of get a snapshot, you don't get any duration for the temporal, and you don't really get a sense of the semantic from the visualization. There is a set of headlines that go along with it. And then news map clusters articles based on their similarity and does have a sense of time. I think the darker rectangles indicate an older story, but there's no sense of space, no sense of geographic space in news map. And then there's Spacecast, which is Sarah Haberkamp's work. It used to be at UCSB, thank you very much. And she was mapping news stories in a topography, so it was really semantic space as opposed to geographic space, in sort of a snapshot in time. And then Theme River is interesting in that it takes the time into account and these different categories of stories with semantic meaning, but again, there's no geographic transportation component. So we really wanted to try to capture all of these three domains in kind of visualization. And I know you've seen this geovisualization cube before in the series, but just wanted to put that up there. I really like this graphic because it kind of encompasses, you know, the whole breadth of geovisualization and how it can be used in different ways. It's interplay between what kind of an audience, what kind of data relations you have, and then what kind of interaction at various, you know, stages of research and analysis and present communication. And feel free to, as I go through, to jump in with questions or comments, especially with the visualizations, you know, any feedback, I'd love to hear. All right, so our approach to these questions, these large questions, is just to start kind of small, start with a case study, and, you know, let's choose a single story and compare it over two different states. And ask, you know, what can geovisualization do that things like graphs or other means of analysis can't? And how feasible is it to automate this problem? So that anyone could do a search in a news archive or other kind of text-based archive and then end up with, you know, a mapped geovisualization to explore the data with. Right. So the story that we chose was Terry Schiavo's story. And if you remember, this was back in 2005, and it was this right to die case in Florida. And we also asked how to read the story. We had a high school intern working with us that summer, and we asked him to come up with some ideas for stories for tracking. He came up with this one. And it actually turned out to be really a good candidate for a case study of tracking, because it's an example of a story that started off locally in Florida, where this woman was on life support for about 10 years. Her husband, after determining that she probably would never recover and had brain damage, you know, beyond hope, her husband wanted to, you know, end her life, and her parents wanted her to keep off on life support in the event that the doctors were wrong and she really couldn't recover. So this became a heated legal battle that ended up going to Senate, Congress, the president got involved. And so, you know, going from this local story that was pertinent to Florida to then being pertinent to the whole United States, that's something we wanted to look at. And then also the time period where it really took off as this big news story was February to June. So it was a short enough time that we could fairly straightforwardly visualize it, not have to deal with different fields of time. And we looked at Texas and California, and our data sources, and Texas and California also kind of arbitrary, but, you know, two big states with a lot of different papers that we could look at, similar in size in certain ways, and, you know, different political meaning. So there's sort of different things you could do with those two states. And our data source is America's News Bank, which is a digital archive of news. And it was the only one of, there's a few archives out there, and most of them are consistent with the way they present the data. So we exported the text and then parsed it into an Excel file. But unless it's, you know, consistent in terms of where the headline is, where the, you know, the date is, and that kind of thing, it gets complicated to parse. So America's News Bank is a great source. We did a keyword search on the name Terry Schiavo, spelled with O-I-N-Y. And we ended up with 32 papers in California and 13 in Texas. So just some caveats. I mentioned that the newspaper archive is incomplete. So it's not a comprehensive database of all newspapers, and it's unclear how many it's missing. You know, it doesn't have a lot of really low pages, but it has more of the major ones. And also, as I mentioned, the archives have an inconsistent structure, so it's really limits what you can do in terms of, like, automating the process. And then finally, newspaper circulation areas is what we're really interested in, because we're interested in who's reading the papers and who's getting the news. And right now, and what we did here is, where is the news being published? So where are these newspapers themselves located? So, you know, kind of thinking of, they're disseminating this information as opposed to who's actually, you know, reading the program. So right now, we're actually working on doing the newspaper circulation areas and, you know, doing visualization of that and seeing how it compares to this kind of thing. So you have to be careful in interpreting the visualization. We'll get into that later. All right, so the process, just going to take you through what we did. We started with America's News Bank, doing the keyword search, and came up with about 1,400 articles in California and about 700 in Texas. We then exported the text and parsed it into Excel, where we had columns for the newspaper, the city, the publication, the date, the headline, and the word count. Okay. And then we geocoded the newspapers, mapped them in ArcGIS, and then annotated, animated, and flash. So a really straightforward process. And you know, and software that's totally available. And it's, you know, and our assessment for the automation process is that most of this is fairly straightforward. There are some issues I'll get into a little bit later. But we weren't going for an automated tool, but we did get a lot of interest in people asking, do you have software and can we buy it? Because they're interested in doing this as a teaching tool in classrooms, or political scientists are really interested in it, or things like elections, like tracking progress, and things like that, with, you know, how different issues are presented. So I'll show you some visualizations, and I have two different ones. And sort of a caveat, sort of an apology. This is the kind of thing that you really need to kind of sit down with and go through a couple of times. So it'll be up on the website, so you can go back later and look at it in more detail. But I'll introduce it to you and kind of point out some of the things that we saw. And feel free to, you know, jump in with comments and whatnot. So what we have is Texas and California, and in the back are its population density. We have our timeline down here. Each month is calendar month. Here we have a graph of story frequency. So the orange is California. Oh, can you see that? Barely, not really.
Sorry, it's our camera here.
Yeah, I could make it smaller. Yeah, well, just to kind of show you. Can you see that? So there's a bar here that moves across. So it's chapter progress. So as this red box is going to move to show you where you are on the timeline, and then this red bar that's starting thing is going to move through to show you where you are in terms of story frequency. So this is the number of articles for any given day. And I'll try to run it as small as I can. You can see it okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Although it's really small here. So the other thing we have is the legends, and you'll see different size and different shades circles pop up. And they'll pop up on whether there was this article with the Terri Schiavo keyword present that day. So it's a day by day kind of thing. The circle size indicates the circulation size of the paper, so small circles, small circulation. And then the word count is represented by shading. And you can think of it as the ink on a page. So the darker the shading corresponds to a higher word count, which means more ink on that page. Okay. And also, down here you see February 18th, we took some events from this timeline of events of the Terri Schiavo story and kind of put them in at different points. So this is getting sort of where it's like partially presentation for an audience and partially analysis. So we use this to do the analysis, and we first just kind of looked at the visualization, and things started popping out, like when all the newspapers would carry an article that day, and so, okay, what is that? So by going back to the events, we were able to match up, you know, what events corresponded to an explosion of articles. And so we kind of mapped that out for the user, but there's still a lot of areas where you can come and kind of see, okay, why is that happening, what's going on there. All right, so I'll start this, and I'll kind of show you what happens. So you can see things start to pop up. At the beginning here, it's fairly quiet, not much going on. At this point, a judge in Florida postponed the removal of the feeding tube. And Terri Schiavo's feeding tube was sort of the main issue because when they remove it, then she ends up dying. If they keep it in, she remains alive. So that was this whole issue of whether to remove it or not. And so a lot of decisions based on that. And so you start to see a little bit of activity, mostly in the big cities. You know, you have Dallas and Houston, the LA area, the Bay Area. Here the feeding tube is ordered to be removed on March 18th. But still, you know, just largely in these big cities. And I'm just going to kind of skip through some things here. So you can see on our timeline here, we're nearing the peak. Okay, and here's the Senate requested Terri Schiavo to testify. That was an attempt to delay the removal of her feeding tube. So this is, you know, the Senate's involved, and the Congress is getting involved too. So, you know, you see the stories get bigger, there are more of them. And then March 21st, when President Bush got involved in the case. And you'll see after that, this sort of explosion And then you have a court decision that they refuse to order that you be removed. So this is when you can say really it's a national view, a national story. The small papers are carrying it, a lot of large stories. And starts to taper off here, you can see a little dip. And then it goes up again when Tereshkova actually dies on March 31st. And that's our second spike. So, you know, you have this major wedge where the position is involved, big slide, and then it really starts to drop off again. And then another wedge, your death, and then it starts to move down again. Where it's becoming old news, people are saying that they're getting immune to the news story, because you know, paper doesn't feel like they care so much, and they don't report on it as much. And then another interesting thing, this blip down here at the end, and the big question was about the autopsy results, and because the autopsy was going to show whether Tereshkova suffered, whether she did indeed have brain damage that would prevent her from recovering. And so that information came out in June, and so at this point there's really not a lot of coverage on the story at all. You know, you've got big cities, you've got the sort of small stories, autopsy results released, and then you just have a couple of things. You know, you have the major cities, again, moving to some smaller cities. But that's where the extent of it quickly died off again. Okay, so that's the first animation. But then we asked, well, what kind of stories or articles are they? You know, it just has the presence of the Tereshkova keyword, but really, that could be anything. So next question was, well, let's classify these articles into event-related versus tangential. And tangential primarily refers to issues that were brought up. So the right to die, living wills was a big topic that came out of this, whether Congress should be intervening in things like, you know, people, family members being on life support. You start to get a little bit of yellow circles, a little bit of tangential articles, again, in big cities where it starts. And then President Bush gets involved on March 21st. And so, but what's interesting now is that it's mostly yellow, it's mostly these tangential stories. So it's not really about what's happening in this case, but it's about these issues of should the president be involved, should Congress be involved in these types of situations. So, you know, by breaking down the articles in this way, you get sort of a different picture of what's going on. And sort of another layer. And it goes along, and I'll just let it run until the 31st, you can kind of see. And again, I apologize that I'm kind of ripping through this, but you can go on the website later and take a closer look and a longer look. So Tereshkova dies around March 31st, and then the next day, where it really comes out in the paper, again, the event is that, you know, she passed away, but it's still all this commentary, all these tangential stories. So it's really sort of interesting to note that, you know, now it's not about this woman in Florida, but it's about these larger issues that, you know, are going to affect the population. And then also, in her autopsy results being revealed, you know, some events, so the autopsy results are revealed. Seeing that the LA area, it's, you know, the fact-based events, but she's been vowed to have still more commentary. So it's interesting to go and you can, and so like this, you say, well, what's going on in California now? It's not, the Texas isn't hearing about it. Here, actually, the California State Assembly was looking at assisted suicide legislation, so that's why it's referred to California, but not to Texas. So, due to this visualization, you kind of get to, you start to ask questions about what's going on. You know, you see patterns, it's because we're kind of wired to look for patterns, off these patterns, and start to ask what's really, you know, the story behind it. So, visualization one, just to kind of go back, as I mentioned, the first analysis that we did was to look at these salient events and then link them to the actual event timeline. We also we noticed that the big cities were the first to carry the story, and it makes sense because bigger papers have more pages, they have more sort of real estate there, and they can devote to a greater number of stories, where smaller papers don't have that. The plot of articles per day on the initial cut was similar to a disease pattern. This pattern of, you know, upswing and the decay, similar to this, the graph of dams and bottom plate city, all the same sort of pattern. And again, Alex will record it in more of an analysis on the disease model. But you're interesting that you can, you know, what is going to be a good model to fit to this kind of information spread. Okay. And then so for visualization two, to kind of go over what I said, we have this event-related versus tangential stories. And so the events are path-based, as I said. The tangential represents the broader impact of these events, you know, talking about these broader issues that are going to maybe go into legislation, that, you know, can the federal government come and dictate whether your relative can be in stay on life support or not. So things like this. And then unrelated stories, which I didn't really point out, but on the second visualization, they just appeared as, you know, the gray circles, so there was no color indication there. And they're unrelated, but they're clearly effective because they have this keyword in there somewhere. So an example is, you know, the Pope had commented on this case and that he was, you know, in ill health. So things where it's just sort of, it comes in as a side note, but it does come in. So you can think of these stories as affected by this other news. So what are those connections? And what's the significance of those kinds of connections? So a lot of interesting information for analysis here. And the difference in these two classes, the events versus tangential, in these two states, you know, it was primarily event-related until Congress and Bush got involved, and then you see it switching over to this more tangential or broader impact. And then the Western Texas, I forgot to point this out. But you can look at a lot of it. So there's three papers, actually, I'll put that here. There's these three papers here, and they didn't really light up at all until President Bush gets involved. And then they come up as red, so they're really reporting the events. So where, you know, most of the other papers are talking about these consequences, these broader impacts, these small papers are really just reporting on the facts of what's going on in the case. So, interesting ramifications of all of this. And then also we noted that the tangential story started in Texas before it started in California. Especially in Houston and Dallas. And as I mentioned, by the time that Terry Schiavo passed away, there were more tangential stories, more of these broader impact stories than the event-related ones themselves. So you want to ask the question, so does this visualization help in interpreting like this big database that we had of these articles? You know, what does the spatial component provide that graphs or other things really don't? You know, looking at the frequency curve of the articles per day. And so, you know, based on what I just said, I think that we think that the spatial component does provide provides information, and it provides sort of ways where you can see patterns, and you start to ask questions, then you can test the further analysis through going to different sources. But another question we had for further analysis is how similar are these stories across the papers and across different states and different areas? So especially with these tangential stories, you know, there was a whole gamut of types of issues that they were covering. So when they were talking about, you know, living wills in Texas, were they talking about that in California, or was it a different issue? So we're starting to get into that now with this data set, looking at further refinements of the classification. But we also did a second study that I'll talk about in a second, on the national level of front page views. So just to point out the limitations, There's a potential, of course, for misinterpretation and overinterpretation, and this is probably true of every visualization, where your viewer might start to make assumptions of what they're seeing or what's going on. And as I mentioned, we have incomplete paper coverage, so there are a lot of papers represented in like the Western Texas region, but there are probably newspapers there too. Maybe they didn't get into the news bank. So it's hard to make assumptions about what beyond those areas just that you see with the newspapers. And again, it's publication location, not readership. So it could be that a lot of people get the LA Times, don't live in LA. So some of these papers are reaching other areas that you don't really get from this. And then also, as I said, the content type of article, which is for the keyword, Terry Schiavo, you don't really know if that's about the events or about something else or something totally unrelated. So you really have to be careful in coming to visualizations like this and being really sure what's being represented and what can you take from it. So just to point out some of these limitations here. And these observations pretty much sum up what I've said. So I won't really go into those. All right, so then the next thing we did was we wanted to look on a national level at front page news, right? So front page news is the hot topic of the day, major, and we looked at August, so the month of August in 3 different years, and we chose the top 15 circulating papers, again, went to America's News Bank, and our criteria for the stories was that they had to appear in at least 3 papers. So, if something happened in Chicago, it had to also be covered in, at least 2 other papers because, a lot of times, your local news is what's going to be the most important for your area. So we really needed to get at what's going to be considered national news for that. So this is a visualization that has a lot of things going on, so let me explain it. We have bar height and then bar color. And I admit there's some issues with the three-dimensional thing, but you can give me feedback whether it works for you or not. So here, this is the bar height represents the percent of all stories covered. So we have this set of about 70 front page news articles that are in more than 3 papers. So of that set, what percentage did each paper carry? So you see like the LA Times, New York Times, Star Ledger, Houston, Atlanta, Chicago, they tended to carry most of these stories. So it was the front page, it was a national news event, it was in newspapers for the most part. And then the color is what I find really interesting, and this is what we call response time. So, news event happens, and then at some point in the future, the newspaper carries the article reported on it. So, how fast the newspaper is responding. And so what you see in red are newspapers that responded the fastest. So a news event happens, it gets on the front page either the next day, the next day and a half. This is averaged across all the stories. And then the papers in yellow, a day and a half to 1.7 average days to run the story. And then these blue, the two, Arizona and Minneapolis, on average at least 2 days to respond. So, you ask questions like, well, are they looking to the larger newspapers to see what's really becoming national news, and then they're running those, what's going on with this delay. And you have the circulation size at the bottom, just to give you an idea. I also have, this is a graph of all of these stories, and this is from August 2001. All of that page articles, we've labeled some of them to give you an idea, go back that long ago, remember what was happening. But it's interesting just to see these all plotted out, and how a lot of them peak with a lot of the number of articles and all of those 50 papers within the days of August. So, a lot of them just, peak and then down. So, they're on the front page for a day or so, and then there's new news coming in, just becomes old news. So this is 2001, and then 2003, it looks like this. And remember that huge blackout in New York City? And this is 30 articles and 15 papers, so everyone had the story. This is the only story that every single of these top 15 circulating papers carried on the front page, which, I think would be interesting. You might say, why are there 2 stories per paper on average? A lot of times on the front page, there'll be multiple articles with sort of different approaches, to the story, what's going on. So,
So this is also over, you know, more than one day. So it's not just a straight heat, measurable heat, but it's actually over time. So that's interesting. And then we divided the country along the Mississippi into west and east because we had 15 papers, and it was 7 and 7, and you know, we couldn't break it any further to get any sort of statistics. But we wanted to look at domestic news versus international news, right? If you talk to anyone who's not country, they say, well, you know, you're only getting the half of it. You really don't, you know, I don't see a lot of the national news or international news. Just what's going on in the rest of the world. It's really focused on America, you know, the Middle East, you know, some key parts of the world, but really not a good breadth of what's going on. So we looked at these two regions, Eastern and Western, and the domestic news coverage was very similar. Domestic stories were carried about the same in these two areas, but the international coverage was different, and with the Eastern papers carrying more international news than these papers in the West. So, you know, there are these differences, it's kind of starting to come out, and then, you know, you can go and interpret these, so this will bring in other disciplines to really look at the, you know, the sociocultural aspects of what's going on, why these patterns are coming out. So, we're going as far as saying that there are these patterns, there are these things, and, you know, you can get it done by doing this true visualization, but doing the interpretation is a whole other, you know, another big chunk of that. So, the implications of all this research is contributing to understanding how these channels of communications work. You know, it's increasingly important to understand how information flows from, you know, individuals, from institutions, and things like this. It's also, we were doing this work after Hurricane Katrina happened, and so, you know, how do you communicate to people when you really have to, how do you spread the word, and things like that. And then, so this, it does, we feel, integrate semantic, spatial, and temporal components of the data set. You know, we track the story through time with these developments, and then the semantics, the different types of stories that are coming out. And then, so it's moving, it's getting towards an automated interactive tool that would ideally visualize any text-based database query. And I mentioned that there's a lot of interest in this kind of a thing being available for any kind of, you know, for any kind of scholar or high school researcher doing a paper or a teaching tool for a professor, you know, to start to be able to map just text databases that you could never really present to a class, much less if you're, you know, your own self as a researcher kind of wading through all this data. And then it also inspired the spheres of influence concept of content. And I'm running out of time, but really quickly, I mentioned this in the beginning, and have a video that kind of shows you what's going on. So I'll just run that, but spheres of influence is spatial, temporal, and semantic dimensions of global misreporting, official title. And these are all the students involved. These are all students through statistics, art studio, electrical computer engineering, computer science, geography, and psychology. So a lot of meeting of the minds here.
Spheres of Influence Project is an interactive digital art and information exhibit visualizing the content and distribution of online world news. The basic setup of the installation consists of 4 side-by-side LCD monitors with 4 overhead cameras to track the user's movements. Users interact with the space by simply walking in the rectangular area in front of the monitors. The system shows the top 12 international stories, and users may navigate among them by simply walking from side to side. If a user wishes to engage a story, they simply walk forward towards the monitor to reveal more information. A set of representative headlines are shown, and after a short delay, connections are shown representing the strength between the event and location and the volume of reporting in a given geographical area. At this point, users may also navigate in time using hand gestures recognized by the cameras. If a user wishes to disengage a story, they simply walk backwards to return the system to navigation mode. In addition to the main navigation screens, there will be 3 supporting screens. The first one will be showing imagery associated from the related news stories. The second support screen will be showing a highlighted keyword list for any given story engaged. This list arranges itself out of the chaotic state of all keywords taken in one single glance. In addition to the keyword list, the third support screen will show statistical information generated from the entire Spheres of Influence news database. The Spheres of Influence project is supported by the Anicet Iger Interactive Digital Multimedia Program at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
Yeah, and some statistics that mentioned are here. So this is actually in our library, David's library. The idea is to present this information where users can interact. You know, they see an image, they can walk towards it, and then it brings up the headlines, and then maps them where this is coming from. It uses Google News, and all of Google News every day is being collected and used to visualize, and then it's being stored. So it's creating this great repository of information that then can be, you know, a basis for further research and further visualization. So this is the starting point, and they see this evolving into, you know, this is currently like the daily news, but maybe it would take a single topic or a single theme, and maybe trace some of history, trace some different things based on all of the systems that we have. So this is some exciting work that's going on in Santa Barbara that kind of grew out of this other work that Alex and I did. So it's nice to see that, you know, it's going in new directions. And they're also, which I find really interesting, they're doing evaluation on it. So, you know, actual site-based experiments, having people interact, see what kinds of information, what kind of knowledge, what kind of, you know, ideas they're getting from actually interacting with the installation. So I want to leave some time for questions. So I'd just like to thank my advisor, Keith Clark, and Esrao Jamal Adaka at Statistics, also advised this project, our apprentice researcher was Shane Hendrick. Fantastic. You think a high school student coming in to work on graduate level research, I mean, the students are so bright, they just pick it right up and really do a great job. So that was a really great, if you can ever work with a high school intern, do it. It's fantastic. And because it makes you really focus on what you're doing. And when you have to explain your research to someone in high school, you know, you really have to get straight in your own mind what it is that you're doing. So it really did help us kind of focus in on, you know, what are the questions that we really want to address first, and how are we going to do this, and be able to communicate that to a wider audience. And then, Sarah Cavacan, of course, and also thanks to you guys here at LSU. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and also any feedback from the presentation.
When you set up the keyword search, I noticed that you did Terry Ann Schiavo instead of Terry Schiavo phrase. Why?
Because, you know, I think I just had done that just to get the screenshot. So I think we probably actually did Terry Schiavo without looking up Terry. But the thing is to know, we did have to look at different spellings because, you know, it was Teresa Schiavo, but commonly called Terry, and there were both Terry and I and people are. But yeah, we did have to play around with the Newspeak database to figure out just how it was going to return the results. And the different archives had different ways of doing things too. So, yeah.
When you had the fact-based articles on Terry Schiavo versus the tangential, did you include editorials written by just regular people in the page?
Yeah, and also letters to the editor. So you have a lot of public commentary. And so that, so as I said, that can be further subdivided into those types of things, you know, fraud issues.
Thought about correlating with the
right
to die state, Oregon.
That's interesting. We did not look at Oregon, but that would be really interesting then to look at to see what kinds of things that would have. Yeah, so I think, you know, that's a very important point. And ideally, you know, if this was an automated process, we could just do all states, you know, or any number of states, and just, you know, put the information in and have it come out with these visualizations that we can then compare. So we don't have anyone working with us who is working on that automation. So if anyone's interested, feel free to question
it. When you showed the maps with the circles of your each day, in between each day you faded them out and then started from scratch. Was that done intentionally as opposed to fading from one day to the next? Was there a reason for that, or is that just where it's done?
Well, we did want to fade it to, you know, that. It's a good question because that's one of the decisions we have to make, you know, how are we going to represent this?
And, you know, we didn't want to just go from one to the other. We wanted to sort of, you know, it kind of goes back to a blank map, and the next one comes. And we separated it to make it kind of pop. So if it had gone from one day into the next day, you know, you might not get the sort of visually salient, you know, pop through the new day. And then, and also, it really marked the beginning of the new day. So if we had done a gradual transition, it might have been harder to distinguish where it was in the fading versus the, you know, here.
Did you try to see what it looked like the other way?
I think we did. I mean, we tried a number of different things. And again, it's something that, you know, we would like to do more of, like, look at the different ways of doing it and get some user feedback. But a lot of these types of things, you know, it's based on, you know, you as the expert, say, trying to figure out what's gonna be the best conceptually for an audience. But I think when we tried that, it was just a little bit too blurry in terms of, you know, seeing the other outline areas stick out.
You said that a number of people queried you about GTF software, can I use it? Where are you in that process? Are you going to have a write-up of what you've done, or do you have a write-up of what tools you use for to get to people?
Yeah, we're going to, Russia going to present at the ICC meeting in Moscow in the fall. But we aren't really working on a product, per se, because that's not really our skill set, and both of us are kind of on other things, like Alex is doing this for components, and I'm doing my education work. So it's really, I mean, it's a really great, someone can pick up from here and kind of go with it. And we're still working on some aspects of it, like the clustering and things, but, you know, there is definitely interest in this kind of a tool, but it's not going to be a little thing.
As you start getting into the circulation coverage aspects, are you also taking into account, well, the placement of the article, rather than just the type of it, like, was it front page, was it in a Sunday edition, was it in an evening edition, how long was the article, where was it placed on the page? Do you think you consider any of those kind of factors that actually will, since you are related to the channels of exposure?
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, if we can classify these articles in different ways, we can build a visualization where you could select these different things. So you could select, like, all of the news and show that. You could select only the front page articles, like all of the editorials. The more information you have, you can set it up so that it's a way where the user can really select what they want to see, and then you can immediately compare things, you know, by running them one after the other. Yeah.
Next thing just related to that is some of the stories are going to be off the AP, so probably all the first paper one, pretty much do the story versus the one that they've written myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or
I mean,
size.
Right, it's not an interesting question. How much is duplicated because it's from the AP versus, you know, the paper's own journalists or other sources? Yeah.
Did you look at or notice any sort of weekly periodicity in the timeline, like more stories on Sundays?
Yeah, I mean, you see bigger stories on Sundays typically. And there was, at some point, there was sort of a flurry on the Saturday, which is kind of private. Smaller, but you know, it's a good point because there are different importances to different days and names, you know, Sunday versus Monday, and all the other days. So, that's something you could definitely look at here, kind of keeping in mind. That's why we wanted to have this running timeline at the bottom where you can kind of see the red box moving along. Even if in your peripheral vision, you can kind of see when it, you know, tracks back to the next Sunday. So you can kind of, you know, keep a sense of where you are in the week, and that way as you're watching it, you know, you can kind of keep attuned to where that bar is. You can kind of like see, okay, it's a new week.
Kind of following the AP line in terms of objectivity of news, look at the reporters that are involved, but any independent reporters that work for different newspapers, so that'd be an interesting concept to look at whether or not, you know, big news stories dominated in a small pool of reporters.
Yeah, it would be very interesting. And I think that it's great influence just coming from Google News, you know, they're tracking where it comes from, if it's AP. I don't know what level they get to in terms of the actual, you know, the journalism. But yeah, that would be awesome to look at.
I'll go and then I'll let you go again. Julie, I was really intrigued by the analogy between
between the spread of news and the spread of disease. And I wondered if some epidemiologists or other researchers have picked up on that, and if they're taking your work and trying to go further with it. Because it's interesting when you're looking at the spread of disease, there are causative factors and then there are physical factors that will cause the disease spread to stop. So I wondered if there was some discussion of that with regard to the news stories, because you mentioned, for instance, when Bush and Congress got involved, things kind of went haywire from that point. And what other kinds of causative factors would be involved in the spread or the decrease of a news story?
Well, there was some really interest in this, I think in the 60s, actually, when we're looking at this kind of question of the news following. And the interest now is around like information spread, more generally than particularly news stories. And I don't know this literature very well, but there is, it is of interest. And to look at some of these factors like contagion, and if you have the news, if one person in the household reads the newspaper, then if by talking to other people, then that's going to spread to the household, things like that. So yeah, I think there's a lot of potential to look at this. And Alex's work, he kind of came up against the limitations. And that you can only go so far with this disease model. Another idea was the pollution model. But it seems that there are some of these issues, these social issues, that don't quite map up with the disease model so well. And especially in the age of the internet, you could liken it to someone flying, across the world. But the internet, where you can have a news story, everywhere at once, that's really different from having it, reading a newspaper, passing on a newspaper. Or telling someone how that direct contact. So, especially when you get into the internet news, that's where that starts
shifting. Since most Americans today get their news from electronic media, have you been looking into some way to think of that?
Yeah, well, that's with this Spritz influence. They're taking Google News, which is a news aggregator that looks all across the web, and they're building up a big database now, every day storing all of these. So that's because the problem is, if it's hard to know who's reading the news online, because you can't go to every single website to click on that page.
Yeah, but the broadcast media, for example, is still the number one source. And there are several different networks with different followers.
Yeah, that's true. That would be another area to look, but the availability for that is still really difficult, to get who's watching. And there's no real repository for these newscasts. There are some archives, but it's the kind of thing where you might, request the tape of a certain thing. You can't just kind of go through. So the data availability is a real limitation to answering these kinds of questions, just because, we're limited to what we have available to work with. But again, very knowledgeable questions.
Just as a thought, one way of looking at that might be to look at, in addition to Google Aggregator, which is sort of more neutral, go ahead and collect FoxNews.com versus CNNNews.com versus MSNBC.com or something. If you could get all of those aggregated together and flag them by which source they came from, you might explore that data a little bit.
Yeah, and that would be a great way to sort of, illustrate that news is very biased wherever it comes from. That would probably be showing the extreme examples, but it would get people to think, we've got some media literacy here. So yeah,
that would be fascinating. Well, Julie's going to be available here for a few more minutes after her lecture. If you'd like to chat with her some more, and graduate students, especially iGRIT graduate students, are more than welcome to join us at, if you're not a graduate student, you're welcome also, but McMenamins for our weekly dinner with our speakers. And Julie, in appreciation for your terrific talk, here is a geovisualization poster and an OSU Geosciences Club cap. And because this is such a nasty day, you get to borrow my beaver paws. Thank you very much.